23rd, 1996, Rob Rob in Louisville, Kentucky. The topic is relationships. Okay, so we started chatting earlier before this tape started, and you guys find any place you want, and I'll just come hang out with you, wander around. I just need pacing room. So we were talking about time distortions and multidimensional realities, and the bottom line is that your homework is to recognize that what you believe is, that it really isn't seeing as believing, it's believing as seeing. So we're principally going to work today on what I call disbelief systems. You already have more than enough belief systems, you don't need any more. But it's about mostly disbelieving in yourselves. We talked you into, since you were little persons, that it's not okay to be you in one fashion or another, or we're worried about you, don't scare us, or we're going to hurt you, or if you be this, you're an inconvenience, or we don't have time for you, or we have too much time for you, you're our life, you know, get back, leave me alone. Whatever it is, the bottom line is you guys knew you were perfect when you were born, and you always have been perfect, and it's the disbelief systems that are getting you. Look back to these little babies who lay there in the give-it-to-me mode. You know, the give-it-to-me mode is you lay there, and you go ahead and try to get them to look at you. They look right through you. They don't give a shit about you. Their eyes are wandering all over the place, and you're trying to get their attention, and they're transparent. Anything, they'll lay there, all of a sudden they cry, or kick, or scream, or laugh, or giggle, all like in, what, 1 second? And you go, oh, the poor thing, oh, now they're laughing. Okay, I guess it wasn't such a big deal. It's just, they're not attached. It just goes through them like, what, peas and carrots? Is that the saying? Peas and corn? Those feelings and emotions just go through because it's just an experience. Of course, they made it an inexperience. Most of us then make them experiences. We need to see it outside. So us adults, let's say with our children, we go, oh, oogly boogly, you know, are you okay? Is this all right? And after a while, we start having this interface and feedback with that person. And we learn that, oh, if I do this, then I get that. Or if I do this energy, if I lean to the left, well, then they lean to the right. And so we start losing our transparency. We start attaching it to outcomes or identities. And the trick is, one, you guys lost your transparency. Everything stuck to you, and you started having these disbelief systems. When I do this, everybody must do that because that's what Mom did. Or when I do this, everybody must do that because that's what Dad did. Well, you guys have been around long enough to know it's bullshit. You can do that same behavior, and 2 people won't notice. 10 people will think you're an asshole. The other 10 will think you're the funniest thing on planet Earth, and the rest won't even give a shit. So was it really you, or was it the person's interpretation based on their disbelief systems? And so you guys are all working right now in the world of relationship to yourself. You're working on becoming transparent again. And so one of my little favorite plays on words is, as soon as you get over your family of origin homework or your parenting issues, you will get transparent. And so, or without parents. There's a whole bunch of plays we can do here. So the homework is to recognize that what you really think is real isn't. And that doesn't matter. Not to say, oh, well, then nothing's real, what should I do? It's about being fearless about it. Okay, it feels real. You know, it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, walks like a duck, but it's really just protons, neutrons, and electrons in a thought form configuration. And if you put it under an electron microscope, you can drive a Mack truck through it. It really isn't a duck. You guys think you're sitting on something solid. This is not solid. This floor isn't solid. The planet isn't solid. And we have this belief that if it looks solid, it's real. And if there's air between it, then it's nothing's real there. And I'll show you how easily your guys' brains believe this lie. It's my favorite little example. Take the palm of your hand and put it like a foot in front of your face, with or without glasses, because I'd like for you to focus on one of the lines in your hand. Lifeline. I know you all got a lifeline or you wouldn't be here, so look at your, at least there's one of those. Some people have almost like no lines. Like, wow, what'd you come here for? Nothing? You know, the real secret, by the way, on planet Earth is to do nothing and do it well. So hopefully we'll get to that today. So focus on one of the lines in your hand, and then I'd like for you to keep focusing on that point in space where your hand was and move your hand. And what does your eyes and brains do when you move your hand? Does it all of a sudden get stressed? Does it feel like it needs to look at something solid or it's going to have a heart attack? You were told that your brain believes that it needs to look to the next solid object. And for me, there's tons to see right there. In fact, everybody has the ability to see tons of stuff. When you were little kids, didn't you all just lay on the ground and look at that blue sky, and all of a sudden it looked like you were having a plasma attack. There's all that, because there was nothing to focus on one of those days where there's nothing. Pretty soon your brain just says, fuck it. I'm not going to try to focus because there's nothing to see unless a bird or a plane flies over. And so as soon as something moves, oh, there's something. Whew, boy, are my eyes happy. That was really hurting. And as soon as you don't have anything, you just get to see all the textures. And one of the things I'd like for you guys to practice with me, because I can make my aura like really big and really visible, and I'll try to stand where this post with the light is behind me. After a while of just listening to my inane, mundane chatting, you'll start to wander, or you'll stop focusing so much on me, and you'll probably see all this lighter. It might look like white light at first. For those of you who see auras, you'll just see lots of purple and indigo, a little bit of tan here and a little bit of green here, and a big band of yellow on the outside. So just to validate what you're seeing, for those of you who start seeing it. And most of you are like right next door to seeing that, and some of you already do. So in the world of relationship, we just want you to know it's about how you relate to yourself. It's not about intimacy. It's not about dating. It's not about this one-on-one, I got to find the right person. That's a trick. Now, the fun part is once you know who you are, you get to have partnership. And really what I believe everybody's really looking for is partnership. So I get to throw out my definition of relationship and partnership, so maybe we'll be on the same track. I believe we get into relationship to learn about our hidden agendas so we can learn to relate to ourselves. So when we're in relationship, that's the wonderful thing about loving somebody is they're obligated to bring up your worst fear. It's their job. Chris Griscom, in her writing, as I've referred to with some of you before, she calls it handpicking your executioner to get into relationship. Well, Chris, you know, she's such a soft-spoken woman. Her green and violet self, you know, she doesn't ever say it like it is. Handpicking your executioner is exactly what it is. And so I actually have the opinion that when the shit hits the fan, your relationship is a success. And it is a Cinderella story. You guys heard that last time, yes? How many of you thought life should be a Cinderella story? At least you were told it should be. Every time I read Cinderella, I don't know about you guys, but it was only the last two paragraphs that were really any good. 100 pages that suck. And then these last two paragraphs about he kissed her, she kissed him, or something, got off the towers and then lived happily ever after. Prior to that, you had pricked fingers, a bunch of dwarfs, the axemen, wicked witches, you're out in the brambles, you're sound asleep. I love the metaphor. You're always sound asleep and then wake up and live happily ever after. And this isn't a metaphysical chat. I don't consider myself a metaphysician. I just consider myself an opinionated violet and indigo. And so I'm really pretty non-denominational. In fact, a lot of metaphysical people, I just want to like stick my finger down my throat and throw up so I can like get over it. Because the bottom line is, if you haven't done your homework, if you haven't done your relationship homework to know who you are, whatever format you go in, whether you go into the corporate world, whether you go into the military, whether you go into being a hippie, you drop out and join the subculture, go ahead and put on your love beads and go ahead and let your hair and your legs grow long and go ahead and wear those Birkenstocks. But if you're still angry and if you're still doubting or if you're still needing to be right, you're just going to be right with a whole new language base. And it's whipped cream on shit. I think that's what my friend Candace calls it. She doesn't pull any punches either. It's a trick. So you all will see in whatever venue you play with, whether it's in relationship interpersonally, whether it's relationship with somebody in the elevator, in line at the bank, whether it's in the businesses you're in or who you have as your friends, it's the same old story over and over and over again. Jung and Freud, who I enjoy very much, both said pretty much the same thing. Freud always referred to the saboteur in all of us. And Jung referred to in relation to that, taking another stride with his work, that we repeat in our lives events over and over again until we have the excruciating cellular memory as to why we're doing it. Now, because they're therapists, they get to use words like excruciating because they're going to charge you more. I prefer to call it an aha. We will do this same experience with all these different people, wolves in sheep's clothing, over and over again until we get, oh, I just don't believe I'm love-worthy under these conditions. Or maybe my dad was right, I should have been a boy, so I'm going to act real masculine and then everybody will think I'm cool and love me. Or maybe I should be more intelligent, and so you try being more intelligent, finally you really think you're intelligent, and then you get some person that says, God, you're just too intelligent, I can't live with you, I wish you were stupider. Have any of you had those experiences, women, where the guy tells you you're too thin, then you go out with the next guy and tells you you're too fat? It's one of my favorite Southern things. I just saw it the other day. So good. This person. And didn't you talk to me about somebody who was this really thin person? Was that you, Sylvia? And so Sylvia and I were having a chat about that. There's this person she saw that was just thinner than my finger, and the guy at the workout place was busy telling her how fat she was. She was just about to blow over dead, and she was going, okay. you know, I'm gonna see if I can like get down to just cartilage and bone. Clank, clank, clank. But the trick is, it's not about him. He's not the bad guy, and she's not stupid. She believed that she's only loveworthy under certain conditions where we approve of that person. So that could just be one of the ways she seeks approval. It doesn't have to always be about your physicality, but this person will go through her life until she gets the aha that what other people think about me is none of my business. It's their projection of themselves. Till you guys get that aha, you'll go around worrying about what other people think about you, whether you should be taller, shorter, smarter, dumber, meaner, nicer, right or wrong, and the bottom line is that you're not being your real selves. What other people think of you is really none of your business. What I think of each one of you is based on what I feel about me. I can ask everybody what you all think about me, and you're all going to have different opinions. So am I all those persons, or is it just based on what you see? The hardest thing to do is to be brave enough to know that truth, to be brave enough to know that that person who calls you an asshole, or what did we talk about? Somebody, Brad, for you. I'm going to pick on Brad, sorry. Brad's got lots of yellow, so he's going to be shy. I apologize. He had this really, and he likes intense women. He's like me. We like to pick these nuclear power plants to do our relationship work with and do this disintegrate us. This person said to him at some point, I hope that your kidney, you don't find a kidney or that it doesn't work. And that's not a really nice thing to say to somebody that you're in relationship with. And the trick was, in that reality, when somebody makes that wish on you, guess who it really happens to? It happens to that person. You're really just talking to yourself. That person really loathes themselves. Person who loves themselves, you ever been in one of those moods where you're just it's a happy as can be day? The plane flies over your head, oh, it's so wonderful. The neighbors are arguing, isn't that cute? This car almost runs you over. That's a really cool car. I wonder what year that is. That's a nice color. Nothing phases you, nothing bothers you, and then by that afternoon, you're back to normal. And all that stuff is, you treat it differently. It's based on how you feel, what you see. And if that person's not liking or loving themselves, then they will make these comments. And it's not. And our job is not to take it personal. Our job is to get healthy enough to go, oh, sweetie, did I remind you of one of your issues? Am I exposing you to your lack of appreciation or love for yourself, or your self-loathing? Well, I'm very grateful you picked me to be the one to do your homework with, because I'm not going to take it personal. You don't get to put your shame in my body. And we knew two very important things as kids, and you guys all heard it in America. It takes one to know one, and I'm rubber and you're glue. Bounces off of me and says, kids are real healthy. I mean, until we really get our hands on them, if you listen real close to your kids, all our job is to do it. With my children, I just stayed out of the way. You know, it was hard to stay out of the way for 20 plus years, dodging and moving. But the bottom line was they turned out to be amazing people and amazing parent in their own right. And all I did was just dodge them. You don't really have to teach kids or tell them anything. In fact, only thing you have to teach or tell them is all the garbage you were told. All your own personal fears. Homework here is to recognize that even our children we're in relationship with, and they are intimate with us. Our children and the people we do love with in the world of relationship are here to remind us of our greatest fears, and then we usually put it on them. In the world of partnership, in order to have partnership, you do relationship to learn what your issues are. You're not broken, none of you. You don't need fixing. You're just to love and accept yourselves just the way you are. So you cry a lot, so you're an asshole, so you're late for everything, so you spend money like there's no tomorrow, so you like alcohol, so what? Who gives a shit? The bottom line is if you have a judgment about it, you will then have these things happen in your life in relation to that. The homework is to recognize you're perfect just the way you are, and then you can smoke cigars till you're 100 like George Burns. You can be a famous drinker, who can we pick on here, Dean Martin. Can be Dean Martin all you want. The homework is to recognize that only when you have dis-ease with yourself does any action you take cause dis-ease. You really can eat what you want, sleep the way you want, do what you want, be what you want. And the homework is when an issue comes up with it, your homework is to see what it was about. It's not about, oh, I had a Coke, therefore my blood sugar got blown out and my adrenals are crashing. Yeah, that's probably what's happening, but what's behind it? Why did that happen? How many of you went to school and had physics or chemistry classes or biology? Did they ever talk to you about bacteria? And did you get to that? I loved that part in school where they told me, I have enough bacteria in my body to kill planet Earth. Each one of you has lethal bacteria in your body. Then why aren't you dead? My belief was that as soon as you believe you should activate them, you do. So your guilt and shame or your own issues triggers it. It's very scary. You are your own destiny. And so in the world of relationship, you get into it to discover who you are, not who that person is. They're not supposed to change for us. I'd just like to get the guy at the gym and go, oh, do you think you're not love-worthy unless you have a perfect body? Or unless you're the right width or height or narrowness? And who told you these dimensions? What book is that in that you should have these dimensions and that makes you better or worse? It's like watching Danny DeVito, who's a violet. It's very charismatic, and he's just this little dumpy stereotype, you know, sweaty at the strip joint, sticking the $5 bills in, kind of just has all those parts that we all love him, even though he plays these obnoxious characters. He's just an okay guy. You just like him. Why is it when we all were told that people like that should be avoided and they're bad, do we now pay him millions of dollars for every movie he makes? Or because he doesn't believe that bullshit. When I met Danny DeVito, go ahead and tell him he's small. He'll say, who gives a shit? Tell him he's losing his hair. He goes, well, I hope you find it. He doesn't care. He's totally happy with himself. He has an amazing life, an amazing friend, and you can give him all that stuff, and he has no disease with it. In fact, if you try to put that on him, he'll just laugh at you. You guys, you recognize when you go out in the street, you can always know who the targets are. My favorite example, like I say it to Sylvia and all you others with Violet, is the go ahead and walk up to somebody, or when they come up to you and give a comment to you, and like in Sylvia's case, she's pretty Violet, like Cher. Can you imagine giving Cher a lecture like she'll give a shit? I always want to say to Violet, like, pretend you're Cher. I think that's what we said to you, right? Anytime somebody tries to tell you what you should be, just say, well, would Cher do this? would she go, oh, gee, I'm sorry, but? Or would she, like, whip out her sword and say, you look like Sonny? Nuke them. Dead men. The homework is to recognize that there's nothing to fix. You're not broken. Real important. And our society is totally based on there's a better tomorrow, you're all broken, you need newer clothes, bigger things, the fancier stuff, and it's all fear-based. There's always going to be a better tomorrow. Here's the secret about fear. And some of you heard me say it before, but there's a few new ones in here. Fear is an anticipatory energy about what might happen. It's about tomorrow or 2 seconds from now. Or it hasn't happened yet, can't possibly be broken, and you can't fix it. So in order to stay present in the moment, you need to start paying attention to yourself. In relationships, what points out all the areas of lying to yourself, all your disbelief systems in yourself, where you sabotage yourself, where you will repeat over and over again these events until you get the aha about who you are. So in partnership, we're talking about relationship and partnership. We're right on time. So in the world of relationship, it's about how you relate to yourselves. That's it. In partnership, once you know who you are and once you love and accept yourself for who you are, you when you're in that partnership, you really don't care what that other person is. You don't need to project on them. You don't need to have them be a certain way to make you feel okay and to medicate you. And you'll find it's medicating. The word I like to use is I'm not your pharmacy or I'm not going to medicate you. And you'll have wonderful pop quizzes out there. And a pop quiz, as you start getting brave enough to be yourself, is a little test you'll take to see how much you really comprehend about the truth of that. Remember about pop quizzes in school? The teacher always says it's not a big part of your grade. It's just to see if you understand enough so you can move to the next chapter. So be prepared for the pop quizzes. When you lose your identity, and when you start being what we told you should be, and you lose your transparency, you move into reactivity. And the minute you move into reactivity, you've lost your creativity. And that's why there's such a movement now for everybody to rediscover their creativity, the artist's way, and all these different forms of searching, or even creative people. We have artists and healers in the room, a couple full-on artists in the room, or creative people doing contracts. Even though you might be doing your creative stuff, you might find a resistance to it, or a fear behind it, or it won't be accepted, and that's part of the, oh, okay, they're going to be in reaction to it for me so I can get in reaction again. As soon as you recognize who you are, the fun part is as soon as you recognize who you are, nobody challenges you on it. It's amazing. You can be the most opinionated person or the quietest person. They won't tell you to be louder or they won't tell you to shut up. You can present your ideas and concepts and everybody will love them. And we've all experienced these people who we thought did like kind of mediocre work. So why is it they're so famous, or why is it their work is so honored when it looks like the writings of a fifth grader, or it looks like the performance of a first year performing arts student? And when Madonna first started performing, how is it she got so famous? She was horrible. She's become a much better performer at the moment. She was clumsy and klutzy. I thought she was going to trip over her feet. You can be a rising bloom, over she goes. The homework is to recognize that all it takes is attitude. And attitude's just a vibration. When I do consulting work for AA, one of the sayings I noticed they had there was, besides live one day at a time, which is stay in the moment and be fearless, they say act as if. Act as if you're sober, so you can start having that vibration happen for you. And in order to act as if, you have to stay in the moment. Your homework with fear is to recognize it really is false evidence appearing real. It's a feedback system that goes into your disbelief systems. Your homework is to stay in the moment. How do you do that? You know, I'm worried about the rent, or that guy's got a gun in my face. Or the homework is to start finding whatever techniques work for you. And the first one is to pay attention to your breathing. So we're going to talk about breathing today in a technique fashion. The other one is just to do personal inventory. Because most of you, when you give up your transparency, you're not in your body anymore. You're not getting your information any longer. You're not trusting it. In fact, it scares you. Every bit of information you have says be you, and your whole being was told, well, if you'll be you, we'll not love you or like you, or you'll disintegrate, or we'll abandon you, or we'll trash you. So why would I want to be in my body and feel all those things about me? Yet we bitch and moan and complain because we're not having the life we thought we should have, but we're not in our bodies to be there to create. We're in reaction. So when you're in reaction, you never get to have your life. You're not being creative. So fear is devastating. The homework is to do a personal inventory. If nothing else, simply say, here's my feet, and here's my calves and my thighs and my stomach, my neck, my hair. And what sounds do you hear? Like, how long have you guys been hearing this fridge run? Have you noticed how many times it's turned off and on? Well, are you able to hear it while I'm talking? Are you able to feel the temperature changes in the room? Like it's cooler now and it'll be hotter in about 30 seconds if that heater keeps going the way it's been going. So it's not just about staying in your brain and staying shallow and not being in your... You're missing so many wonderful feedback systems that help you fearlessly be you. So the key is to get back in your body and stay in the moment. And the last thing we told you that was okay for you to do is stay in the moment. In fact, Madison Avenue tells you get a newer this, build, work towards a better tomorrow. We're based on the stock market, which I just love the stock market. I grew up in a very wealthy family, and I just love that they talked P.E. ratios and stuff. And I just say, oh, okay, I'm going to, how about that? And my thing would go up 3,000% in a couple of years, a Magellan fund, and my dad would buy something that would go down 2,000%. But they had all this inventory, and they had, but Dad, you forgot, the stock market runs on fear and emotion. It has nothing to do with logic. It has to do, if somebody sneezes in China, you better sell your tea fast. It has nothing to do with whether there's plenty of tea or not. It's a trick. And so our whole country says it's based on this logic and all this stuff, and I just love people reading the Wall Street Journal and Investors Daily and listening to Mark Kandel or whatever his name is and watching them change their hairstyles right and left, going from curly to bald to straight every day. And the bottom line is they didn't tell you anything useful whatsoever. They wouldn't be on that show. They'd be too goddamn wealthy to be there taking the time to tell you how you should invest your money. If you're going to listen to somebody about money, listen to somebody who's got money. And they're too busy spending it to tell you about money. And the bottom line is it's not about this logic. It's about fearlessness. When you guys truly become your fearless self and are willing to be abundantly you and to recognize your relationship with everything around you is just how you feel about you, and you start getting back into creation of your life instead of reaction, you'll never have to have some chat about how do I make money and what about my health, what about my dis-ease. Because once you're at ease with yourself, there is no dis-ease. Disease is simply to show you you're not lined up, you're not in order with yourself. In this decade of truth that we're in, it demonstrates itself. Now, I'm not very linear, so I make up these linear things on occasion. Bear in mind, there's probably many more things that'll fit in between, so these aren't like set in stone. They're just Rob's ravings. The four ways I've observed that you get to demonstrate your truth and hopefully have it listened to at some level looks like this. The first way is to tell your absolute truth. reap the reward, suffer the consequences, but fearlessly be you. That's a child. They just say what's on their mind, do it, and eventually we nuke them so much that they don't say their truth anymore. Or we convince them that the world's going to come to an end. We henny-penny them out of it, and so they start going into stage two. Stage two, first stage is tell your truth, which is where we're all really to be. The second stage is drama and crisis. If I want to have my truth heard, let's pick a kid going to school. I used that one last time. We'll use it again. So a little kid says, I don't want to go to school. Well, you have to go to school. In fact, I want you to go to school because they're my professional babysitter now, and I've had you for 5 years. God damn it, get to school. and so then we take them to school, and we do the prying off of the leg. Any of you have children and have done the famous prying off of the leg, that's drama and crisis. We go to, they're not going to make me go to school. And you finally throw them in the door and run out of there in tears, feeling guilty. And then when you come back to get them, you have to do the prying off of the teacher's leg because they had way too much fun and don't want to leave. So it's a reversal, but it's still a drama and crisis because their truth is they don't want to come home now, or the truth is they wanted to stay home. And the bottom line was both, we're either going to have to take them or leave them. And so they go into drama and crisis. Well, drama and crisis sometimes work. Oh, okay, well, can you stay 10 minutes more? Okay. So you might get 10 minutes out of it. Sometimes that works. The bottom line is the only thing that really works is your truth. So we think that drama and crisis works, but it's just a delay. And if we find that we think it works, we'll just keep going right to drama and crisis in our life to say who we are. Like the people who have will work for food, how many of them do you see in our Armani suits with their Jag parked around the corner and going, we'll work for food? And would you stop and give that person money? If they were missing a leg and their face was shot off and they say Vietnam vet and you could tell that somebody else had to write it because they got no hands, and maybe you might give them a buck. In America, the worse you look, the more we think we should rescue you. You've been conditioned in that by every movie and everything I've ever seen, and if you help them, then you're a good person. Well, if you help them, you're a fool. Well, we'll get to that opinion because that's just giving away your energy. You're actually keeping them sick. You're perpetuating their myth that if I destruct myself and if I'm having drama and crisis, then or disease. We go, the third level is disease. Tell your truth. Nope, doesn't work. Drama and crisis. Oh, doesn't work. So maybe if I'm in disease. So the sicker they are, the more we'll help them. Well, watch what level you help them at, because the minute they hit your compassion button, guess what? That's the level you operate at. They're simply telling you where you operate. So if you gave some bucks to one of these guys on the corner, how devastating did they need to look? Hopefully you gave it to them when they were in an Armani suit. I would recommend that, because that means that's when you feel you're most effortless and easily will get an exchange of energy. If you gave it to them because they looked really bad off, that's a belief. They matched your belief that you had to be bad off in order to... They got your compassion level, and it's really your compassion for yourself. It's not for them. That's where they touched your button. And so they're a feedback system. They're a pop quiz. They show you where you're operating at. That's all. So the disease state is when we all get sick, and the kids are the best at it. What is the number one way to get out of going to school? You all know it. And every family has that magic number. Mine was 104 because my mom's a bitch. You had to be 104. You have to be near brain death in order to not to go see the tutors. For most of you, the minute it touches that magic 100, you don't have to go to school today. And so you work on that light bulb, you get friction, you try to, at least they taught you about friction in science, so you can say, Mom, I'm applying what I learned in earth sciences here, so I get out of school. And you try heating that thermometer up. And you'll find that how many of you in the years when, maybe for those of you who are working for yourselves, but when you weren't working for yourselves, found that the easiest way to get out of work is to go to stage three. Like, we get trained to jump right to picking up the phone, giving them that fake cough, and the only reason they don't laugh at you on the other side and get your ass in here, because they expect when they're doing it and they get you on the phone, they expect reciprocation. Oh, you did the fake cough 6 months ago, remember, Fred? Well, you owe me one. I'm doing the fake cough today. Or the real truth is you pick up your phone, you go, you know what? I really think this job sucks. You don't pay me near enough. I'm totally bored. You're all a bunch of assholes. I don't even see the purpose in what we're doing. It's just for money, and it's not very much at that. I'm not coming in today. Tell the truth. You'll get fired, but at least you'll get set off on the way to doing what you want to do. We've taught you, don't do that. You'll get fired. How dare you? You are a failure. You have no work ethic. You're lazy. A friend I used to, I consider myself one of the laziest people on the planet. I love a friend of mine, I used to brag about being lazy, and so he sent me this card, I still have it framed at home. To be thoroughly lazy is really a difficult job. Industrious people build industry and lazy people build civilizations. So I have to agree with that. So I'm just building civilization while I lay on my couch having grapes. The homework is to recognize that the truth is what sets you free. It's not. It's your truth of who you are, and we're all different. You don't get to be me, and I don't get the privilege of getting to be you, and you're here to be your true colors or your full expressions of yourself, right or wrong. You know, like if Cher, if you ever saw her, like let's say Cher came to visit. Occasionally I get the privilege of visiting with her. Let's say she came in dressed in a Laura Ashley dress. Wouldn't you all like have a major heart attack? Cher, you've disappointed us. So, like, what happened, you traitor? We were counting on you to always be in leather or those. Let's see your tattoos. And what about those shredded pantyhose you wear from World War II? You know, and where's that 17-year-old you're sleeping with this week? You know, let's say she comes in with some guy her age and she's got her hair all curled and in her Laura Ashley dress. We'd be so disappointed. And yet, if you started putting on that attitude or doing it, you'd think you'd be a bad person. Many of you, especially women, were taught shame on you for doing that. Yet, it would be shame on her for doing what we thought would be shameless for us. Make sense? Watch out for the catch-22 trap. Madonna, I just love Madonna. I pick on her all the time, but I really do love her. You know, God, we all hate Madonna. Here's another $100 million. God, she's such a bitch. She's got no talent. Here's another $100 million. We give her lots of energy and acknowledge her because she's fearless. She really says, this is who I am, and she doesn't give a shit what you guys think about her, and everybody at some level admires that and really recognizes that she actually got rewarded for her fearlessness, not her talent. There's many greater talented people than her. There's many greater talented people than most of the Oscar winners for the whole time they've had the Oscars. That's more about a paternal pat on the back, self-masturbating sort of thing that the Actors Guild does with themselves. Has nothing to do, and so you guys don't waste your time watching it tonight. Is it tonight? It's sometime soon, is this horrible, boring thing that has nothing to do with but who slept with who and who owes what, and now we have Black Whoopi Goldberg doing it this year because they finally got some black person on there. It's just so full of politically correct stuff. And watch it and see how you relate to it. I just giggle with it because for me, I get to see all my issues. It's all in this one little system. Your homework is to stay in the moment, not because it makes your life perfect. It does, once you realize you're perfect, whether you're fixed or broken. But the fun part of the perfection of it is you get to see, once you get self-centered and you get in the middle of your reality and get selfish, you get to have a 360-degree view. You need to be self-centered in order to have a 360-degree view to see what you're doing to yourself, what your feedback is. And then you get to appreciate watching these TV commercials or watching these shows or walking down the street. You get constant feedback about who you are. That's what relationship's about. And you can have relationship. I like having relationship with my TV because when I get home, I'm so tired of people and traveling, and I don't want to see one more airplane or one more group of people lined up following some cattle thing. Before we came here, we went to the grocery store to get you guys some munchies that are over there. And so we had to go in the wrong way into the store. Of course, the Kroger's here wants you to walk down this whole length of this thing and around. No way. So we just walked through one of the cashier counters and made everybody move over and said, no, we're going this way. And the funny thing was, you think that would make them angry, doesn't it? Like, don't you know this is the right way? Did they get angry? They thought it was really cool, funny, giggled. And I said, don't mind us, you know, we're just making our own, we don't know where we're supposed to go, so we thought we'd go this way. And they just moved right over and let us through. It's great. And nobody gave us the, don't you know you're at Kroger's, goddammit, you're supposed to go down this line and around. Now, some of you, if you did that, I promise you, you'd get that chat. Hey. The manager would maybe even come up for some of you. It depends on your level of authority figure issues. And would come and say, well, son, this is a Kroger's. And everybody's like a cow here. They follow this. And moo, you walk down this thing. And then you go and shop. We shop from left to right here. This is like China. We read from left to right. We don't go from right to left like most grocery stores. I wanted to go right to left. I can't help it if I have functional fixedness. I've been in so many grocery stores where you go to the right and go to the left, and they want you to go from left to right. So that was my issue. I was going to, no, I refuse to go left to right. And so I just get to have a joke about it. You get to have humor with it. You get to see, well, that obviously is one of my issues. And I'm very grateful to work on it in a very non-threatening, giggly, fun sort of way. But it definitely was my issue. I really don't believe in following other people's rules and regulations. And my whole life has been based on doing it Rob's way. And so as soon as they say this is our way, I have to make my own little capillary. I had to connect through from the main store, from the entrance, I had to go right through the cashier. Now, in the past, when I was little, that would make most people go nuclear. The fun part was, is the pop quiz for me was, well, we get to find out right now, it's not only for me, but Sylvia, the person who brought me to the store and chauffeured me in there, is going, does Sylvia have this issue also? I found out since neither of us had that issue, they just let us go through, and they just thought we were very fun. It's like, what's so fun about cutting through the line? But did you ever get in trouble for like cutting through lines and stuff? Well, congratulations, you passed the major pop quiz. I mean, there were a bunch of people in there. It was like all the old ladies in town were out. There was even some lady whose outfit matched her hair. If she stopped for a moment, you wouldn't tell if it was a person. She had perfect silver hair and a perfect silver, you know what I'm talking about, yeah? And if she just moved, she would become invisible if she stopped moving. She was so perfectly camouflaged. It's like be invisible. So in the moment is the only place where you can actually touch the physical. It's the only place where fearlessness exists. If you guys have fear, it's a tap on the shoulder saying, look, you're not in the moment. That's all it is. Do not waste your time fixing it. Go ahead and buy this, or go ahead and learn that, or go ahead and get thinner, or go ahead and get fatter, or go ahead and get more hair on your head. Go ahead and buy newer tennis shoes. It's a trick. It doesn't matter. Because I promise you, the minute you do that, I can find somebody, I can send over to you and say, I can't believe you have all that hair on your head. It looks stupid. Find somebody that says, well, I liked your old tennis shoes better. It's not about us to please them. You stay in the moment and learn about you. And when you're not in your body and you're not breathing and you're not physically present, you're just nothing but a person in reaction here. And then you get to be Newton's third law of physics. You don't get to be nothing but a Newtonian physics mathematical formula. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And all you are doing is validating this foolish man's physics, which is really archaic now. But most of us are still believing. How many of you still believe Newtonian physics? How many of you still think that scientists are really ignorant people that just really are trying to tell you all what you should do, and they're like stubborn dads? You haven't met most of the scientists today. They're very cool, outrageous people doing stuff you would not believe. There's a group in Stanford I really enjoyed working. They're working on where you they take saliva, a husband and wife. The wife spit in and put saliva expectorated into this. I have to use their terms. Otherwise I spit, you know. Not very scientific. She expectorated into this little test tube. And then they put these little electrodes in there and things that measure different biochemical changes in it. And they had her husband touch her or love on her or send joy to her or look her in the eyes. And you can literally get, when they're having a connection, there are changes in her saliva even though it's outside of her body. And it's the same as the solid belief we did with your hand. We're going somewhere with this. You'll get to see how you guys have been lying to yourselves. You think that's solid, then you move and all of a sudden, no, it's not solid. I'm freaking out. So yeah, it's okay. Of course that would work. You know, her husband's right there with her. So then they put him in the next room, and it still worked. Then they put him in another state, and it worked. And now they put him on the other side of the planet, and it still worked. While she was here, and he was as far away as they could physically get him, short of putting him on the space shuttle, that probably is what they're going to do next. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we have John in the space shuttle while Barbie's trying to be stimulated down here. Well, we're doing that stimulation experiment, and you guys don't want to know about it. So while the other side, and he was sending her all these sexual messages, and the saliva was still responding, even though they were set. There's this era of separation. There is no such thing as separation. You guys are not separate from each other. This space that we thought was air, where you think you need to look at the next solid thing. There's tons of stuff between you. You're simply, if you you guys ever do spoon bending? Any of you ever guys bend spoons? It's real easy. Well, maybe we'll ruin some of their silverware here. Basically, if you'll just recognize that you are protons, and we're going to do a little Newtonian physics. We won't get too subatomic here. You're basically protons, neutrons, and electrons with a space. Protons, neutrons, electrons, and a space, and a space. And then right beyond you is more protons, neutrons, electrons, and space. You aren't ending. In fact, you guys' auras, when I watch you, look like a bundt cake to me. It's all swirls together and you are not separate. For those of you who've had readings with me, we can, as you've noticed, we can talk about all your family members, whether they're alive or dead, or we don't really need to know much. Like, oh yeah, John, and you guys are all part of me. You're not separate from me. That's the disbelief systems that you were taught to operate under, that there has to be a separation, and that there's such thing as good and bad people or right and wrong events. That's what sets up all the dramas in your relationships. That's what sets up all that, do they or don't they love me? Can I commit or can't I commit? Will I stay present? Won't I stay present? And who really cares? That's really the answer. Who cares? The bottom line is, when you're all dead and gone in a bunch of ashes, is somebody going to go, oh, they never could commit? Or, she was such a victim and a martyr. It doesn't matter. It's really about you, what you enjoy for yourself, about your own personal experience. So we have a true blue and violet here, whose job is to throw her heart into the arena in every relationship. We have a violet over here whose job it is to get her to get up on all eight cylinders and be passionate and powerful. We have a couple of green and violets sitting there whose job is not only to lead and inspire, but to do it very vociferously. And it's, your job is not to be toned down and quiet. That's like Cher coming in the pioneer dress. That'd be like, what a disappointment. Somebody's got to kick butt, and that's your guy's job. Somebody has to bend over, and I can line up a few of them for you. That's their job. Now, their job is to like it. There are actually people who like it. And then we send them into therapy to try to fix it. Go, no, no, no. It's their job to like getting their butts kicked so that we can kick their butts. Or it's my job to get my butt kicked by the person whose job it is to kick it. And the thing is to understand how the magnetism works, how the vibration, how the polarity works. This black and white, this good, and since we're in the South, we'll do a black and white thing. And giggle, right after I asked you, by the way, when you were driving me here, Sylvia, about the little, how many of the people in Kentucky still have the little jockey in the front? There was one at the next house. Did you see it on the left? Yeah, it was right before you come to the light at Blankenbaker in that road. It's right on the left. There's, and it was just like 10 seconds after I asked her. Yes, oh, massa. I had to have one of those. They're telling me the tape's almost over. Excuse me a second. We'll come back to it. So the trick with the black and white is, since you guys are having that comet thing happening in north of the equator, and they were all worried about the clouds, so you guys probably aren't going to get to see it, so this example won't be so poignant, but how many of you noticed you can't see the stars without it being dark? And so this thing about, oh, we need to bring in the light, or bring light to things, or lighten it up, and you go, well, I don't know, or this black and white stuff. You can't see the stars without the dark, and you don't really appreciate the dark without the stars. It makes for contrast. That you can't be who you think you are without measuring where you are in time and space, and it's about polarity. You can yawn, Sylvia. It's okay. for every plus one, there's an exact opposite called a minus one. Did you guys get that in math when they showed you the little scales? And for every plus one that goes north, there's a minus one down below. For every sort of tall person, there is an exact opposite called a sort of short person. Can find exact opposites even in ambiguity. Your job is to get over judging it as though it's good or bad or right or wrong. Just accept it. When you accept it, you're accepting yourself in time and space. The minute you can become abundantly you, the universe will be abundant with you in all areas. Now, if you had peace and harmony, contentment and well-being, if you really were within yourself and you got back in and you can stay in the moment, you're having one of those perfect days, but you have it like permanently now, would you care really if you had a nickel to your name or not? Do you really care if you have your arms and legs? Does it? Hello, yeah, well, it's still moving. Okay, so breathing. I'm going to talk about that in the next talk also, the suppression chat. I feel it's real relevant in everything I say. When I look at America as an outsider, even though my dad's American, my mom's Italian, and I grew up in Italy in my mom's villa, and we traveled back and forth to wherever my dad was stationed a few times a year for a couple weeks at a time. So the way I learned about America is watching way too much Leave It to Beaver and way too much Bonanza in Italian. Come by, pa. I noticed that America, in Italy, we're encouraged to be artistic and expressive and flamboyant. And me and all my guy friends, you know, we put our arms around each other and we kiss each other, and nobody goes, you're gay. You're only gay when you, like, whip it out and bend them over. Then maybe you're gay. You know, that's usually the measurement in Italy. Here, there you can kiss them, hug them, and that doesn't give them any, well, it's the truth. I'm just kind of rude sometimes with my truth. And in America, I've noticed everything, the land of the free and home of the brave. I left home at 13, and I told my mom, I am going to the land of the free and the home of the brave. I must have taken a wrong turn, because I came to America. I have yet to meet that person, let alone that grouping, this land of, doesn't it make it sound like a whole amber waves of grain field? Maybe it really is the land, and it just hasn't been fertilized enough yet, and so that's what I came here to do, is fertilize it with a lot of bullshit. So the homework is to recognize some really big lies here that suppressed you. This is not the land of the free and home of the brave. This is a bunch of Puritans who wanted to avoid being oppressed by people even greater than Puritans. So it might be the lesser of evils, but it's still an evil. It's still a bunch of suppressive people, not realizing, by the way, what we referred to earlier. What you react to that's being done to you is who you are. It takes one to know one. So a bunch of people who talked about freedom but really were full of shit because they didn't do their issues about they suppressed themselves came to America and created a country based on the rebellious attitude but still suppress themselves. And when we lie to you at the same time saying you're allowed to have freedom of speech, well, freedom of speech includes volume, but try that sometime and see what happens. We'll lock you up. Freedom of speech includes whatever concept you have in your mind. Well, it better be the concepts we agree with. What was that Orwellian stuff? All pigs are equal, just some pigs are more equal than others. The biggest lie I saw was this is the land of the free and home of the brave. The second biggest lie is that there's such thing as an adult. You guys live, this is an area where they used to have snipe hunts, right? Any of you have been on a snipe hunt? You chase that, a snipe's this bird that doesn't exist, and as a kid in camp, they make you chase it, and somebody says, oh, it's over here, and you all run over there. The biggest snipe hunt for an adult is finding another adult. There is no such snipe called an adult. So the land of the free, home of the brave, and the adult, that's the lies that replaced Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. So you thought you got over the lies, you were really, you know, like, I'm really pissed you lied to me about Santa. Well, you didn't realize at the same time they were continuing this lie about this, and it suppressed you. You got misinformed. You were told that you were free and it's okay, but every time you tried to act on that, we stifled you. And so you start getting vigilant, you start guarding and protecting yourself, and the trick that happens is, in order to listen more carefully or to be extra attentive, little kids go and hold their breath. And then it gives you more of that peace and quiet. Or have you ever tried to be invisible in the living room? You ever just tried to, like when you're playing hide and go seek, and you didn't quite get there in time before they reach 10, so you freeze and you hold your breath and you know they won't see you. You got your eyes closed and you're not breathing. Nobody will see you. What you need to really have was that gray hair, that skirt that lady was wearing. If she'd have just stopped breathing, she'd have disappeared. So you just hold your breath. Now, we asked you to be animated, but we've never asked you to breathe. So one of the biggest things that happens I've seen in America is that people act depressed. They're really acting suppressed. When I was doing my PhD work, I argued and did some of my dissertation on that. I totally disagree with the clinical category of depression. I don't think they're really... Now it's actually a diagnostic category, even after being so right about it. Sorry, my prima donna status had to come through. I thought I made a really good argument, too. I see that depression, if you take Plymouth Rock, since we're talking about the Puritans, and I love Malcolm X, it did land on you guys too, by the way. It didn't just land on them. And so Plymouth Rock landed on you in all its puritanical bullshit about freedom, but really you're not free. And that rock smushes you. Blood and guts comes out here. Hopelessness comes out here because that rock's a lot heavier than you are. Anger, enrage, as well as outrage happens. You feel depressed. Not only from the depression it puts on you physically, but you feel depressed. You feel malaise. You feel hopelessness. You feel ambivalence. You feel frustrated. You feel like you need to struggle. You need to effort. And so we'll medicate you. We'll medicate you for having ADD. We'll medicate you for being depressed.